Perek Yudchet, chapter 18 in Malachim Bet. And to make it a little easier for you, what I did was to prepare the parallels for you, which you're going to find are actually quite striking. Again, more than probably any other stories in Tanakh, you find almost the exact same terminology. And certainly, again, as you're going to see, really not such significant differences. For those who are wondering where this is from, this is actually a wonderful sefer to have as part of your library. Again, Ben David's Makbilot B'Mikra, the parallels in the Bible, which is wonderful for anyone studying, for that matter, any story in Sefer Malachim, certainly Nevi'im Achronim, and perhaps most importantly, Divrei HaYamim, which you know is based on the original manuscripts of the works, firstly, of the prophets themselves, and certainly the works of Malachim, of the earlier Nevi'im, again, which chronologically are not earlier, but if you recall, are going to contain much more historically oriented information. With all that in mind, again, I mentioned this last week, and I'd like to iterate, namely that the works of Malachim are not only based on the interpretation of the Nabi who's living during that time, but also, again, we find out in Divrei HaYamim, in Sefer Divrei HaYamim, that every king had his own work of chronicles, had his own Divrei HaYamim. So when a Navi will even write, for example, in Sefer Malachim, that what I'm telling you is based on the Divrei HaYamim, or if you want more information historically on Ahaz, the father of Chizkiyahu, then look at Divrei HaYamim, Asher LaAhaz. And he assumes that you know exactly what he's talking about, keeping in mind that the Navi obviously had that manuscript in front of him. So what we're going to see is that Yeshayahu and the author of Malachim, whom Chazal attribute to be Yirmiyahu, both have the same primary text before them, namely some work of chronicles that are going on during that time. What's interesting, or rather fascinating then, is to note that when there are differences between them, why a Navi, who has more or less the same material before him, why he would consciously omit some of that material in editing his own work. So here's a good example that we're going to see right now. If you open up to Malachim Bet Perek Yudchet, again, the first page that you have before you, the one that says on the top, Malachim Bet Perek Yudchet and Yeshayahu Perek Lamed Vav, note that they basically start the same way, but you'll already see that what's recorded in Malachim Bet is going to be a little more elaborative. What we have to be sensitive to, obviously, is what's omitted. And what we're going to do, which I'm going to be honest in saying is pedagogically perhaps incorrect, is also skip to Divrei HaYamim. Why do I believe that it, to a certain degree, is a distortion of a methodology of education over here? Because you don't know about Divrei HaYamim when you're opening up Yeshayahu. But for those who would like to see the broader picture, we're going to also look at Divrei HaYamim. Rather, again, if we were learning Divrei HaYamim, then what would be imperative for a student to do? Then, of course, you turn back. But Divrei HaYamim, again, by all counts, is written in Tkufat Bayit Sheni. Again, so I don't know about this. Yeshayahu certainly doesn't know about Divrei HaYamim when he's writing it, although it is interesting to see if Divrei HaYamim is based on writings of Yeshayahu and also based, perhaps, on chronicles of the kings that Yeshayahu has in front of him and the author of Malachim has in front of him, then it is interesting to see, obviously, if there are differences, keeping in mind that there are probably other manuscripts and perhaps other distortions that have occurred in the text in the interim. So let's begin, though, by taking a look at Malachim Bet, keeping in mind that we started in Yeshayahu, just noting that Chizkiyahu, who is now king in his 14th year, we noted then that he probably becomes king, if you recall, in 719 BCE, noting that through all accounts of history, the Assyrian revolt or invasion of the Judean area is going to take place in 705, corroborated by various carbon dating that has been done on sites of Yehuda till today. This is when he's going to come to the Arim Betzurot of Lachish, of Azekah, of Tel Shemesh. And that was our background, if you recall, for Rav Shaka, the governor from Lachish, to come and threaten the municipality of Yerushalayim. So now let's take a look back at Malachim Bet Perek Yudchet, and we're going to see that there really aren't many differences, but an interesting idea that you all brought up on your own last time that I'd like to show you here. Ubar Bas Reishanan LaMelech Chizkiyahu, Wala Samcher of Melech Hashor, Kol HaRei Yehuda Betzurot, Vayit Pesem. Any difference until now? None whatsoever. We're looking at these sheets where we're paralleling what we saw last week to what's written in Sefer Malachim. Right, we have the same historical data, but an interesting addition that, again, one has to imagine. Does Yeshayahu have the information that's going to be in Sefer Malachim? Does he have it before him as well? Yes. If he omits it, then it's a conscious omission. So we're going to try to figure out why he doesn't mention this. I think it's going to be pretty clear, but let's take a look. according to this, before Rav Sheka even comes to threaten Yerushalayim, who responded first? Who initiated some type of Chizkiyahu is going to initiate an encounter. And he sends a message to the Assyrian government, which is now, when we discuss this, located in Lachish. Why is Lachish so significant? Again, for those who have been there, it's very obvious. It's the highest area in the entire hills of, again, southern area of Judea. It's the gate, just like Megiddo is the gate from the north, Lachish is the gate from the south. The agricultural terrain that's all over, in addition to it being a fortified fortress from the time of Rechavan ben Shlomo, and obviously all the areas around, including a direct route to Yerushalayim, which today begins Derech Gat, and then you continue through, obviously, the southern hills of Yehuda, directly to Yerushalayim. So they're located in Lachish. Chizkiyahu is going to initiate some type of discussion with him. He says, Chatati, shuv me'alai, et asher titein elai esa. According to this, what does Chizkiyahu first do? I'm sorry, I made a mistake. What's his mistake? Well, let's take a look at what he continues to say. Whatever you impose upon me, I will do. What obviously had happened? Ashur came down, and if you remember, Ashur from the time of Ahaz was an ally of Yehuda. As they conquered the north, what then happened? They imposed, obviously. Again, they're the ally, right? They're supposed to be helping one another out, but they say, look, who's in control right now? We're in control. We'll keep you as is if you do what? If you pay a tax, a very, as you can see, burdensome tax, what does Chizkiyahu do? What did he do then for the past 14 years? He was not paying his tax. Why not? Again, because paying tax meant that you were submitting, again, and basically losing your autonomy. And he's basically saying, I don't understand. My father had an alliance with you. An alliance means that there are shared powers. You let us stay here. We want to retain autonomy. Anna, you're taxing us is one step away from stripping us of our entire leadership and rulership in the land. Chizkiyahu refuses. What happened then? Sancheriv ended up destroying 48 fortified cities of Yehuda. And where are they now? They have besieged Yerushalayim. Chizkiyahu now says, okay, what am I going to do? Time to pay the tax. Notice this, and he pays the tax. In order to procure such a tax, where does he gain the funds from? He takes from Otsar Beit Hashem. What does that mean? The treasury of the Beit HaMikdash. Again, is one supposed to take from that? Even for taxes, we're going to continue to see this later. Of Otsarot Beit HaMelech and his personal treasury. But you have to remember that they've been living in war times, and therefore there aren't excessive funds. In order to ensure that there are sufficient taxes to pay, he also is going to break down the famous latot of Zahav that Shlomo Melech built for the Beit HaMikdash, ve'el ha'et ha'omnot asher tipa Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. And then apparently he made replacement ones and then covered them with gold and had to ultimately give those also to Sancheriv Ha'itznim le'melech Ashur. So notice that Yeshayahu leaves that out before Rav Sheka comes. Sorry? He gives them, Hu natan otam lemelech Ashur. Why is this going to be significant? Here, clearly as background, again, the author of Sefer Melachim wants to offer religious commentary. That, what happens right after? Vayishach melech Ashur tartan vetrasaris vetrasheka melechish alamech Chizkiyahu, and he threatens him. What's the religious commentary of the author of Melachim? Did the tax help at all? No. Now they're still going to be threatened for, again, surrendering. Now they're still told to surrender. Can anyone tell me why Yeshayahu consciously omits that? He omits the fact that Chizkiyahu first refused to pay a tax and then agreed to pay a tax. Yeshayahu, and we're going to see this over and over again, a proposal. Meaning it weakens Chizkiyahu's case. So just go one step further and surrender.
No, I think he's saying you need to be strong and I won't guard that particular incident of the money from the doors. But let's go from here and I won't embarrass you by bringing it up and making you look less in the eyes of the people and in the eyes of your enemy that you submitted once. Let's present you as a strong king.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Okay.
Sort of,
he's trying to tell the people a message by politically capitulating to our
Very nice. Again, for those who heard and for those I know who don't hear via video, so I hope you don't mind that I'm going to be repeating what you said. Yeshayahu, especially over the previous prakim, what has he been saying over and over again to the people? Don't surrender. Again, have complete trust in Hashem. And he has hopes for the future that despite the conquest of Yerushalayim or despite the siege of Yerushalayim, what's going to happen? There is going to be hope for the people ultimately to do tshuva, to rely upon Hashem, and then there will be salvation. So here, in retelling the story of salvation, he wants to show how someone truly had trust in Hashem, how he was consistent and not wishy-washy with his policies, and was strong from beginning almost till the end, and we're going to see why the end is going to be significant, and all the different nuances, and certainly the parshanut of a classical parshanim and a Chazal's interpretation. But here we're going to see that things are just going to get better out of the situation that's juxtaposed to the nevuot of Yeshayahu. So to show almost the realization of the nevuot, to show how someone is going to be strong in the face of Ashur, it certainly, Gena will help us appreciate that Chizkiyahu was strong by presenting him as strong from the very beginning and not as having initially submitted to paying the tax. And therefore, Yeshayahu consciously leaves out that for a while, Chizkiyahu agreed to pay the tax. What apparently happened then between agreeing to pay the tax and Rav Shaka coming? Apparently, Chizkiyahu then decided, look, have they alleviated the situation? Have they relieved us of the siege? No. And therefore, apparently, what happened in the interim? He stopped paying the tax again, and that's what we're going to see. We mentioned this in Rav Shaka's review to Chizkiyahu. You know, why are you not listening to me? Why are you going after Mitzrayim? Apparently, he did stop paying the tax. This is where Yeshayahu is going to begin. But before we continue, we now are telling the story of a very strong personality and how Yeshayahu wants to relay that strong personality. Elaine just told me this morning that her father was diagnosed with an illness, and therefore we would like to dedicate this shiur lerfuah shleima Shel Tzvi Ben Yitzchak, who Be'ezrat Hashem, who I can tell you, sitting in our shiurim over the past few years, always brings not only a smile, but certainly enthusiasm of Torah learning, and we hope that in the schutz of our learning of Chizkiyahu, and someone who is truly a ma'amina b'Hashem, that this will also give strength to Tzvi Ben Yitzchak, Be'ezrat Hashem. So we're going to continue. Very nice. He's already had enough of that from whose time period? Ahaz, right? Ahaz has allied himself, and how has it worked out? Not well, but he keeps on telling them. Remember the last few, hi. Terrible things are going to come, but ultimately, someone is going to remain trustworthy to God. So again, you're right that it doesn't attract too much, but in the end, if he's going to stop paying the taxes, and he's going to be adamant about his position with God, so we have to really mention that for a while he did pay the tax. Nah, so we'll just forget about that. Does he know that you probably know that for a while he said, let's try the political mode of paying the tax? Yes, but in presenting Chizkiyahu as the very strong, and we're going to see how this is going to lead directly to the next section of Yeshayahu and of Malachim, to present him as that very strong persona, let's leave out even those moments of weakness. When they have to be mentioned, not to worry, they're going to be mentioned, but for now, Chizkiyahu is on the rise. Anything that could even detract somewhat, we're going to leave out. Take a look, by the way, at Divrei Hayamim, and this is just fascinating, which is just going to corroborate everything that Judy and Aline said. Thank you. I'm debating. I'm trying to conquer, again, to control myself. I want to say, how can the government get away with taking 50% off of a person's salary? How can, again, you have to remember that if he does this, again, Yeshayahu, by the way, doesn't have this, so I don't know if he even did this with the consent of the Navi, right? The Navi just disregards it as if it didn't happen. But do the people understand why he's doing it? I mean, the king definitely has that executive authority. I hate to say it, but he does. And even though there definitely is this idea of a critique if he's going to take from the Otsarot Beit Hashem, right? You never are supposed to take from God's spoil, so to speak, right? That belongs to God. It's called Hekdesh. That can only be used for purposes of the Beit HaMikdash. That definitely is going to tell us, and Chazal berate him, obviously, for this. How could you take from the treasury of the Beit HaMikdash? Maybe that's part of the reason why, in the end, he's going to fail. Yeshayahu doesn't want to mention that. But he does have the executive power to do it. So now, and the people, why aren't they going to be resisting? Forget about the fact that he's the king. They're in trouble. Do they understand why he's paying the tax? Certainly, Yerushalayim is besieged. 48 cities have been destroyed. The remaining municipality is Jerusalem. So now, just take a look for a minute to corroborate this through what you see in Divrei Hayamim. Notice, does Divrei Hayamim have Chizkiyahu paying a tax? No, omits it. Please keep in mind that the author of Divrei Hayamim has a very strong agenda, and that is almost to completely ignore any shortcomings of the Judean kings and present them as all righteous, strong, both politically and religiously, personalities. So let's take a look. Not only do you not have Chizkiyahu not paying a tax, but Vayar Chizkiyahu gavas hanchei ruv panav l'melchama al Yerushalayim. It presents Chizkiyahu as noting that, forget about even prior to warning of Rav Sheka, there's no Rav Sheka scene. Why isn't there a Rav Sheka scene in Divrei Hayamim? Because the Rav Sheka scene, no matter how you look at it, the one that we read last week, how does it present the people of Yehuda, and certainly the king of Yehuda, as weak, as vulnerable? Look, we've managed to conquer, also putting down God and certainly putting down Yerushalayim. What, you think you're so great? The author of Divrei Hayamim wants to tell you that Yerushalayim really is great. It's an invulnerable city. Gena, this is your symbol of omniscient power, is Yerushalayim. So let's take a look. Chizkiyahu sees that Sanherib is coming to attack Yerushalayim. Ve'va'itzim sarava v'nikorav listom et meimei hayanot asher michutz la'ir v'yazruhu. This is Divrei Hayamim, right, which we're going to need, obviously, when we are going to travel through the Shiloach, through the Mei Mayanot. What does Chizkiyahu do? And this is presented by the author of Divrei Hayamim, obviously as an expression of his strength. He says, how am I going to protect the city? After advising with his close advisors, he's going to cut off Meimei Hayanot. For those who are familiar with Ir David, you understand exactly why he does this. Where is the Petach? Where is the start of the spring of the Shiloach? It's outside of the wall. If the Assyrians control that, again, in their siege, then what can easily happen? Number one, they control the water sources, and what else can they do? Beautiful, right? They can just follow the track, the tunnel of the water, and they have an easy way into the city, which, by the way, according to many, is how Yoav ended up conquering the city during the time of David, even though we're going to discuss this when we go to Ir David and see all the different possibilities. So that's what he does. Again, the key words here are asher michutz la'ir. He has to cut off the water sources that are outside of the city. Ve'ikavtzu amra ve'istimu et kol hamayanot. Which gives us a sense that there were various places of the spring. Please keep that in mind when we go to Ir David. V'tanachal hashotef b'toch haaretz. And what happened? There was obviously a continuous stream that went from the Ma'ayan, from the original spring. Le'mor lama yavo machayashur matzu mayim rabim. They're going to come. They're going to see the water. They're going to cut off our water sources, and they can follow the stream into the city. V'yitchazek v'yivein et kol hachoma haprutza. So what did he do? He basically cut off the original source. Please keep this in mind. He then rebuilt a wall around, and it said he's going to divert the water into this new choma, so that now where are the water sources? Completely inside the city. And matzumayim rabim instead of ayala la migdalot. I don't know. Somehow there are migdalot. This is fascinating to see when you're there. Balachutza choma acharet. We're going to begin our tour by trying to identify where the Milo is. That's going to be the connecting area between Ir David and Har Habayit. Vayasa shalach larov umanginim vayitain sarei melchamot ala am veikvetzei melav al rechov shar ha'ir veidaber al levavam lemor. Not only do you not have Rav Sheka initiating some conversation with the leaders, who is the one who advises? Who is the one who consults with the leaders? Who is the one who's talking this whole time? It's Chizkiyahu. He's your strong leader. He's going to tell everyone what to do. He's the one who's going to encourage them before there's any fear, again, beset in their hearts. Chizku v'imsu al tziru v'al techatu mepnei malachashur mepnei kol ha'amon asher imo ki imanu rav mi'imo. We're greater than he. Imoz ro basar v'imanu Hashem Elokeinu. We're not greater in quantity. We're greater in quality. We have God on our side. It's almost as if they never heard any words of disheartening nature. They only heard Chizkiyahu's pep talk. So obviously, what is going to be the response of the people? יהי חזקיהו. אחר זה שלח סנחריב מלך אשר עבדיו ירושלים, והוא על לכיש ועל ממשלתו עם מלך חזקיהו מלך יהודה ועל כל ערי יהודה אשר בירושלים. Who basically gives one message. What's the one message? Not even Rabshakeh's name that's mentioned over here. Lemor, kamar sanchayr melech ashur, amatem botchim v'yoshvim b'matzor b'yushalayim. Notice this. No disheartening words mentioned by the author of Devei Hayamim. All it says is after Chizkiyahu's pep talk and the people are strongly encouraged, then Sanchayriv sends his advisors to say, what are you relying upon? Which are clearly the words taken from Yeshayahu and Malachim, those manuscripts, but leaving out the content. What was the content? What are you relying on? What, you're relying on God? Who? Who hasn't been helping you. As a matter of fact, he's the one who told me to come here. He's the one who allowed me to conquer the northern tribes. So notice, why is that completely omitted? Not only is it going to make God look bad and Yerushalayim look bad, but it doesn't make a difference anymore because the people just heard a great pep talk of Yeshayahu. All they need to hear then is when Sanchayrav sends his messenger saying, Al me'atem botchim, the answer is so clear because what did Chizkiyahu tell the moments before, so to speak? You're going to have God. Again, it's so clear. Again, notice that, by the way, what else is omitted? Why are you relying on Mitzrayim? Why is that omitted? Because Chizkiyahu doesn't address that. That's going to show a weakened people. No, no sense of weakening, and instead is going to go straight to Chizkiyahu's response. Again, halo Chizkiyahu meisitzetchem, latitzetchem lamut barav. Oh, Chizkiyahu is really a weak king. He is seducing you. Ultimately, he's going to bring you to famine and to destruction. And again, he's telling you to worship your God on only his Mizbeach. But obviously now we look at the words, when you look at it in Devei Hayamim, it seems as if it's purely a religious argument, and you just heard Chizkiyahu almost propose the people, right? Again, predispose them to a much more religious philosophy, right? Everyone see that? Again, no mention of the weakening politically, no mention of the fact that really the entire northern part has been destroyed, no mention of the fact that they've also been relying on Mitzrayim and seeking alliances there, because that would clearly weaken both Chizkiyahu as a king and certainly the people at the time. Thank you. Beautiful. Yafeh. Very nice, right? No mention of the appeasement, right? Which is also significant, which would certainly weaken Chizkiyahu and the Judean people at the time.
I'm not sure, but I think Bidalot.
Yes. Was? Yep. Rivka, you're wonderful. Very nice. Who built it? Who built Migdal David? So it seems that Herod possibly, it could have possibly have been Herod who built the areas of the Migdalot around. Maybe. Again, even this Rehayamim is pre-Herod, meaning this is 4th or 5th century BCE, but pre-Herodian times, but definitely not David. Migdal David, that's really a farce. Correct. That's right. Again, which definitely, that's right, the Mamelukes were definitely responsible for rebuilding. The Crusaders who first built it? Yeah? Called it, that's right, after the Mamluk era, that's right. And again, it really is a misnomer. What are these Migdalot referring to? No one knew. Again, this is fascinating. And therefore, the Crusaders also didn't know, so when they saw towers, what did they say? These are the towers of David, the Chizkiyahu. Yes, yes. Yes, but I don't want to tell you because I want you to see them on your own. But it really is fascinating. You say, oh my, these are the Migdalot, the four tower. Okay, and you're going to see them and pictures of them. And the story really does come alive in ears of him. It sounds like that, no? Yes. Correct. It's written during the time of, very nice, it's written during the very beginnings of Bayit Sheni, when there are numerous disputes between the Samaritans during that time and the Judeans. And it's very important for the Judean leaders to firstly show the centrality of Jerusalem and that there's no need to build a temple in Shechem, like the Samaritans are saying. Secondly, to also show that they are the continuum of the dynasty of David and therefore they're the ones who are in control of leadership. And therefore, Chazal associate the authorship with Ezra HaSofer, who definitely has that agenda, as we see clearly in Ezra and Nehemiah. And if it's not Ezra, then it's someone like him, meaning someone who shares a similar ideology. Sorry? As Ezra, correct. Meaning more or less before. Exactly. Meaning, Divrei HaYamim, I hate to say, you take it with... Thank you. You take it with a grain of salt. Or I'm going to actually say it this way. Many people call it an epithet, meaning it's basically rewriting an epigraph, meaning rewriting history. I would rather call it an editorial, right? Meaning using the facts, but definitely opinion. By the way, I'll make you feel better about taking it with a grain of salt. It's not Nevi'im. What is it? Ketuvim. You have to take all of Ketuvim that way, recognizing that Ketuvim is written Beruach HaKodesh, and it's more an expression of whose ideas? The authors, then. Very nice. Then any, I would say, a wider public audience. That is important over here. Correct. Again, even the religious commentaries in Nevi'im, as we said, Yeshayahu has an agenda. What's his agenda right now? To portray Chizkiyahu as the strong one who is going to be able to stand strong in the face of all these Assyrian threats. But those Assyrian threats are there. As a matter of fact, Yeshayahu has to include the Assyrian threats. Why? What has he been saying for the past 12 prakim? Why are those threats coming, and why have they managed to succeed in destroying 48 cities? Because you have been punished. This is punishment, but not to worry, because as soon as someone is going to be strong, again, and place his bitachon b'Hashem, then Yushalayim will be saved. So that's exactly what his agenda is. Chai is 100% right. But, again, notice that the author of Divrei HaYamim will go one step further and actually say that even prior to any threats, Chizkiyahu is Mr. Pep Talk. He's the strong one. He has no doubts whatsoever. Right, so see the differences. Very nice. Yafeh. By the way, how about Malachim? What's his agenda over there? Why is he going to place the idea of Chizkiyahu, one can say, trying to appease the king of Ashur, trying to, again, even this sense of weakening beforehand? Why even mention that? Because he does want to say that, again, he was trying. This is his religious commentary on what's going on. He tried it and it didn't work, right? So now let's see plan number two. Here we go. So what we're going to continue with right now is really what's both in, as you see, Malachim and Yeshayahu, because our primary text right now is Yeshayahu. We're going to continue with that, and we're going to see now the result of, or the response of Chizkiyahu. But first, the very last part of Perek Lamed Vav. Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. This is where we saw, basically, Rav Shaka saying, Anna, what are you placing your trust in? Me b'chol Elohei haratzot ha'il asher tzilo et artzam miyadi. Has anyone been successful in, or any of the gods been successful in protecting the countries from my invasion? Perek Lamed Vav, for now, just the end of Pasuk Chaf, Yeshayahu chapter 36, the very end of the chapter, the Pasuk that we ended with last week. Ki atzil Hashem et Yerushalayim miyadi. And God did protect any of the other countries. Again, do you think he's going to protect Yerushalayim? And obviously, there's a double threat over here. Not only did he not protect the other countries, he didn't protect your own tribes. He didn't protect your own southern cities. You think he's really going to protect Yerushalayim? What? Yerushalayim is this, again, city of omnipotence? Again, what do you really think? Ve'acharishu v'lo anu oto davar. What's the response of the advisors? If you remember, Rav Shaka came to address the regal representatives of Chizkiyahu, and they're standing on the high ramparts of Ir David. What's their response to these threats of Rav Shaka? V'lo anu oto davar. No one answered him anything. Giving us a sense, though, there definitely, as the Parshanim point out, there definitely is some type of nuance that did it have an effect on them? Yes, meaning if they could have said something, perhaps what would they have said? You're right, we surrender, or we'll pay you the taxes, or, you know, your arguments are very true. How do we already know that he definitely has succeeded in instilling some sense of fear? They asked him a few psukim earlier, please speak a different language so that the people don't hear you, because your words really do sound threatening and intimidating. Ki mitzvat hamelech hi lemor lo tanuhu. Now we understand this a little more. Did Chizkiyahu know of this entourage coming? Yes, he knew of this delegation. Why wasn't he there? He doesn't want to give them. Very nice. No credence. But what did he tell his advisors? Don't say anything. What was he afraid of? Chizkiyahu knew that they were going to come. He knew that he had stopped paying the tax. He knew that there were going to be words of threat. He was afraid that they may jump to, number one, perhaps representing Chizkiyahu and surrendering, or perhaps even worse, that what would come out of their mouths, words of apprehension, of anxiety, of fear. Don't say anything. And by the way, as soon as one is fearful, and you know this in debates, at times, it's best to remain silent. Right? On one hand, silence is acquiescence. On the other hand, what else is silence? It's also a mode of passive resistance. That's right. And that's his approach right now. Vayabo el Yakim ben Chilkiyahu asher al habayit. And this is how the story started. Remember Vishavna HaSofer, who is not al habayit. Vayoach ben Asaf ha-maskir al Chizkiyahu kru'ei begadim. Why all of a sudden are their garments torn? A sign of avilut. Anytime you hear bad news, what was the bad news that they just heard? If you don't surrender, what are we going to do? Going a full force against Yerushalayim to destroy you. Right, the exact same terminology that we find in Malachim. And now, obviously, the tension is all the greater. Again, I told everyone not to worry about falling asleep today because this is very, very exciting. What is Chizkiyahu's response going to be? We're going to see that this is Chizkiyahu's first response. Number one, he publicly is going to also show signs of avilut, but what are his signs of avilut accompanied with? Going to the Beit HaMikdash, recognizing that together with the avilut, it must be that we're being punished for something from Hashem, and therefore there is a recourse. What's the recourse of action anytime you feel? And certainly that tells us that he's been heeding the words of Yeshayahu over the past few chapters, which certainly take us back to the beginning of Chizkiyahu's reign, the end of Ahaz's reign, that this is what Yeshayahu has been saying, as we said, not in one full force nevuah, but one after the other. He's been telling them, okay, the generation has to come where you're willing to accept the punishment and thereby begin this whole recourse of action of tshuva. And we're going to see that this is going to be a pattern that will be established and reestablished thereafter, and therefore a very significant pattern. When the going gets tough, what does Chizkiyahu do? Consult with the Navi. What does that tell you? Very nice. He understands to turn to Yeshayahu. Turning to Yeshayahu, though, doesn't just mean that he's weak and he doesn't have any other possibility. Yeshayahu, in your minds, what is Yeshayahu symbolized by now? Strength, and what has he been giving them together with the interpretation, and it's true, and the commentary of God? He's also been giving them hope, meaning you're my last recourse of hope. You're the one who has also, together with the punishments, you keep on juxtaposing these words of hope for us. So tell me, what's going to be? Meaning I stopped paying the taxes because what have you been saying for the past few years? Things are going to be bad, but ultimately we're going to be saved. But Yeshayahu, I hate to tell you this, but they're at our front door. Again, how much worse can it get right now? And that's the idea behind this. And therefore, again, you're going to see the parallels here. Certainly in Malachim and Yeshayahu. Notice that in Zevei HaYamim, this is going to be omitted. Why is this omitted in Zevei HaYamim? Very nice. Meaning perhaps because it connotes that he was also punished for a little while, meaning all of Yeshayahu's words of Tochacha also coming true. Okay, why else omit it? Very nice. That, beautiful. The king is the all-powerful one, especially during the time period of Tkufa Bayit Sheni. Why do you want to present Chizkiyahu as the star of the show and not Yeshayahu? Because in Bayit Sheni, the kings are really the stars of the show. The Nevi'im are already going to be behind the curtains. Even Haggai and Zechariah, certainly by the time you get to Ezra, no more Nevuah, according to Pshat. And therefore, it would be almost distorting for the generation and discouraging for the generation to say that it was really the Navi's advice. You need the Navi's advice. What happens if we don't have a Navi? No, no, no. You don't need a strong Navi, says the author of Divrei HaYamim. What do you need? A strong king. So again, forget about the whole Yeshayahu advice and just see what happens at the end. But we are concerned with Yeshayahu's advice. Vayamro elav. Kamar Chizkiyahu. Yom tzara v'tochacha unatza hayom hazeh. Thank you. Perek Lamed Zayin, verse 3. Yeshayahu 37. Yes. I told you, with your fingers in both, but it's a little easier if you have the sheets before you. So they report to Yeshayahu and they say, these are the words of Chizkiyahu. It's a yom tzara v'tochecha. Again, heading back to the words of Yeshayahu from the prior prakim. Yes, the day of tzara and tochecha has come. We know this Yeshayahu. Has Yeshayahu spoken at great length about times of trial and tribulation? Yes, indeed. Unatza hayom hazeh. Again, today, again, it's really, really bad. Again, in the sense of, again, now, this day, kivo vanim ad mashper v'koach ayin lelida. I remember, actually, I forgot exactly in what context. I remember one of the first times I heard this pasuk out of context was actually Dr. Brian Levy, who would quote this as a pasuk. She said that always came to mind, not only during childbirth, but again, at a time when we just don't have koach for anything else. And I remember I was pregnant at the time when I heard this. This was 18 years ago. And I remember saying, wow, I don't know exactly what she's talking about. Let me take a look and see what the context is. And when you look at the context, you really can relate to it. But I'm going to be honest, I didn't fully relate to it until I was in labor, right? What is this pasuk talking about? And you know that sense where, especially if you go into labor, Motzei Shabbos, after, again, you finished washing the dishes, cleaning up from Shabbat, and you're exhausted, and then what happens? Contractions begin, and you say, oh no, because I don't have strength for this. That's right. Now, again, actually, this was a Sunday night by me that this happened, but kia ba'u banim ad mashber. The children are there. What's the mashber? Again, we use this term as a crisis, meaning that's how she was quoting it originally, and then said, but look carefully. Again, the children are at a state of crisis, and we have no more koach. And this fits in beautifully with Chizkiyahu's understanding of everything that Yeshayahu has been saying until now. Yeshayahu has incorporated numerous times this birth analogy, talking about how they're going to be Chevle Leida, the birth pangs, and then ultimately the Leida. Ashur is going to give birth, do you remember, to what? To a stillborn. After all of their great anticipations following conception and their siege, what's going to yield? Nothing. But in the meantime, the parallel terminology that he's been employing in reference to Am Yisrael, what will happen to us? You're going to suffer the pains of childbirth, but ultimately the joys of the birth. So Chizkiyahu was playing off of that and saying, okay, we're there. We're at the pushing time. We're the banim. They're ad mashber. Meaning this is when the midwife says, push, it's over. And what's Chizkiyahu wondering? How much more can we handle? Again, now it's true, Yeshayahu, that you've told us that the birth is going to be fine and wonderful and everyone's going to scream mazel tov. But little problem, right now, we have no strength left. The koach ein l'leida, we can't even get to that point of Yeshua and Gula. Tell us what to do. Anna, for those who remember this, Gena, when you're at that stage, and then the midwife says, push, and push some more. Anna, I think we've all been where we say, I'm sorry. We just can't, right? Give me 5 more minutes. No, you don't have 5 minutes. Again, the baby's right there. That's exactly what Chizkiyahu is saying. We don't have the 5 minutes. And the baby's there, but we can't do this anymore. And not only that, Ulai yishma Hashem elokecha et divrei Rav Sheka asher shlacho melech Ashur. Maybe Hashem elokecha, what does that already tell you? Not a very good terminology, very reminiscent of the whole post Chayta Egel, whose people are they? Are they Moshe's children or Hashem's children? And it doesn't seem like God is really helping us out anymore. Maybe your God, again, has heard the words of Rashaka that were sent by the king of Ashur, Adonav, Lacharef Elokim Chai. And forget about me right now, but has your God heard the terrible Chilul Hashem that Rav Sheka has presented, V'hochiach Badvarim, Asher Shama Hashem Elokacha, V'nasata Tfila Ba'at Hashevit HaNimsa'a. Maybe, what can you do? Maybe it's time, Yeshayahu, for you to daven. Maybe you can pray on our behalf. Please, Yeshayahu. Right? V'nasata tfila ba'ad ha-she'irit ha-nimsa'a. We're the only ones that are left. Please keep in mind that all those who were conquered from the 48 cities of the south, whoever managed to survive, where are they seeking refuge right now? In the walled, fortified city of Yerushalayim. This is it. This really is the remainder of the Judean people. Right? Which, by the way, apparently, again, doesn't number more than 2 million, right? And according to many, is even much smaller than that, right? Again, that would be the highest number. According to some, only about 200,000 people left. According to others, even less than that. Again, it's hard when you look at the numbers that are given, certainly by the end of Sefer Melachim and Yirmiyahu, it seems that there are hundreds of thousands here and hundreds of thousands there. Nonetheless, again, not so many at this stage at all, and this basically is going to be, as we know, the remainder of the Judean kingdom for the next 150 years. Oh, I thought there was a hand. Okay, here we go. So please, daven. Vayavo avdei hamelech Chizkiyahu el Yeshayahu, vayomar lehem Yeshayahu, kol tumun al adonichem, ko amar Hashem. Right, not Hashem Elokai, not Hashem Elokechem. You go to your Adon. They're here, by the way, is obviously subtle critique. Who do you see as your Adon? Chizkiyahu. Who does he want them to see as their master? God, but they've already distanced themselves somewhat. Al tira mipnei hadvarim asher shamata. No need to fear. Asher gitfu na'arei melech Ashur oti. God said, oh, you shouldn't be afraid of what the na'arei melech Ashur. How does he present them? Rav Sheka was Again, the general, we said, again, here, one of the proofs, we brought a few proofs, the fact that he knows Yehudit, the fact that he quotes God also as his own. Again, Yisrael Mumar Haya, that he was a Mumar, and as a, no, he's just a little Na'ar, nothing to be afraid of. Hinini Noten Bo Ruach, that this is really what I told you. Again, do you remember the last few prakim? If you were really paying close attention to prakim lamed dalet and lamed hey, what did I tell you? I'm going to start up some type of storm. So notice here the way that it's told, and obviously we're going to compare and contrast. I'm going to somehow embed him with a spirit, v'shama shmua, meaning he's going to hear a rumor. As soon as you hear, though, the fact that the rumor is some type of response to ruach, it means a false rumor, right? I'm going to send a rumor, v'shav el artzo, and all of a sudden he's going to pick up and return to his land, v'paltiv b'cherev b'artzo, and that's when he's going to fall in his own land. So that's what they're told right now. Notice a similar passage that we find in Malachim, very similar idea. And now, sure enough, pasuk chet, vayashav rav sheka vayimsa et melech Ashur nilcham alivna ki shama ki nasa milachish. So here we find, again, just as a, right afterwards, a consequence. Now, once rav sheka saw that, did his words have any effect on the people? Did they surrender? Did they start to repay attacks? No. So what did he do? He didn't go to Lachish. Rather, once he heard, and Kinasa Melech Ashur Misham, he went to find him, and he saw that he was fighting in the area of Livna. Again, we know that Lachish and Livna are actually juxtaposed in Sefer Yehoshua. It says that Yehoshua and Perek Yud, he first conquered Livna and then went on to conquer Lachish. So here, it means that what happened? He was already leaving Lachish, but we just saw that Lachish is the stronghold. What does that already tell you? Is Sanherib necessarily truly focused on Yehuda right now? No. Again, I'm telling you, immediately thereafter, right after, Yeshayahu says that, everything's going to be fine. Already you hear that Rav Sheka sees that he left Lachish, but it's going to continue. Vayishma al Tirhaka melech Kush lemor. And sure enough, Sancheiriv had heard that Tirhaka, again, it even sounds like a Kushite African name, no? Tirhaka, the king of Kush, had said, again, he definitely was from the African armies. According to some, he was actually a descendant of the Egyptian dynasty who then went out and conquered Africa, which is very interesting. And he appears in various tablets of history that were found, again, sometime between, or again, dating him, sure enough, to about 690 to 664 BCE. Why is that perfect? And we said that the story starts in 705. Can he definitely be a king around this time period? For sure. And sure enough, Yatza li lachem itach. He hears that, again, the rumors come about Tirhaka, who's selling Sancheiriv, that there's a war. Vayishma vayishlach malachim al chizkiyahu lemor. And Rav Sheka then is going to come back and say the following, that once he heard that Sancheiriv, or once Sancheiriv heard that Tirhaka is coming to fight him, he then said, okay, let me first take care of Chizkiyahu, and he wants it to make clear that he is coming now to destroy Chizkiyahu. So take a look at what he says. Vayishma vayishlach malachim lachizkiyahu. The idea of his quick response, the end of Pasuk Yud, the end of Pasuk 10. What did he do? Again, right after, and this is just an amazing juxtaposition. Yeshayahu says, he's going to hear a rumor that people are coming to attack him. He's going to leave and go back to fight, and that's where he's going to fall. Before he goes back to fight against Tirhaka, what does he tell Chizkiyahu? Let's take a look and see. Kol tomrun al Chizkiyahu melech Yehuda lemor. Al yashiyacha Elohecha asher ata boteach bo lemor. Lo tinaten Yerushalayim biyad melech Ashur. Can anyone tell me why he has to repeat his threat? Don't be so confident in saying that Yerushalayim will not be given in the hands of Ashur. Why does Sancheiriv feel that he has to send Rav Sheka to reiterate this? What did he just do? Very nice. He left Lachish. It makes it beautiful. It makes it seem as if he's charting off of focusing on Yerushalayim. Not only that, the rumors are spreading. And by the way, are the Assyrians the only ones who are hearing these rumors? No, these are widespread rumors that the Africans are now planning a rebellion against the Assyrians. Sancheiriv wants to make it very clear to Chizkiyahu that it's true, I'm going to have to fight him, but first, I'm set on you, so stop being so arrogant. Right? Again, can we just solve this very, very quickly? Because if you don't surrender, what am I going to do first? I'm going to come and destroy you. But you as the reader, you're already excited because, oh my, right? Yeshayahu said that there's going to be another threat that he's going to have to go and face. And sure enough, that's what happened. So he says, no, but you're not going to be saved. You've heard of all our victories. As soon as you see the arrogance of Ashur again, which Yeshayahu has told us a lot about, again, how arrogant Ashur is, it makes you wonder, why do you have to say this once again? Sometimes people are arrogant when? Very nice, when they're really insecure. You have to say, look at what we've done. He's now resting his laurels on his prior accomplishments. Look at what we've accomplished. You think you're going to be saved from our conquests? What, did their gods, the gods of the Goyim, save them? Again, my predecessors, and he doesn't just mean literally his fathers, but as we know, prior to Sancheirav was Tiglath-Pileser, who came and destroyed the northeastern lands. Again, they destroyed Gozan, Haran. Again, Haran you're familiar with. Again, the northeastern lands of Mesopotamia. Again, the areas of Iran and Iraq today. Their Retzef Uvnei Edem Asher Bitlasar. Ayei Melech Hamat. Oh yeah, where are those northern kings of Hamat? Umelech Hapard, Umelech La'ir Svarvayim, Heina V'iva. Vaykach Hizkiyahu et Hasvarim Miyad HaMalachim. You have to remember this time Sancheirav sends with Rav Shaka his own words. What does Hizkiyahu do with this? Vayikra'ehu Vayal Beit Hashem. He reads them and then he goes to the Beit HaMikdash Vayifrisehu Hizkiyahu Lifnei Hashem. But this is beautiful. Hizkiyahu then lays them out before God. How is this different than his prior mode of action? What did he do when he heard the threats of Rav Shaka the first time? He went to Yeshayahu and he complains to Yeshayahu. So no, the Leidah has to come, but we have no strength. We can't get there. What should we do? What does Yeshayahu tell him? Don't worry. Right? Hashem is going to save you. And again, I'll tell you how. Sancheirav is going to be threatened by a different nation and he's going to leave. So they hear that Sancheirav is threatened by a different nation, and you definitely do get a sense of his anxiety because he's going to come and threaten Yerushalayim again. But does he leave? No. So what does Hizkiyahu do this time? What does he recognize? Very nice. He says, okay, what was the Navi really trying to tell me? Very nice. He kept saying, Hashem Elokecha. What do I have to do? I have to be willing to confront Hashem on my own. And instead of sending the message via Yeshayahu, you know, Yeshayahu, you should do something because Rav Shaka completely insulted your God. Instead, what does he do this time? He takes the insults of Sancheirav, of God, right, of Hashem, and spreads them before Hashem. Right, much more of a direct relationship, much more of Chizkiyahu's involvement over here. And now we're going to see the result. Vayitpalel Chizkiyahu Hashem. You can imagine that what do Chazal learned from this? That you can have trust and trust and trust in God, but there aren't going to actually be effects until you pray before God, right? A lot of the koach of tefillah is definitely seen from this, and soon we're going to compare the stories. Lemar, Hashem tzvaot, Elokei Yisrael Yoshev Hakruvim. This is what's known as Chizkiyahu's first tefillah before Hashem, giving us the impression, especially if this is a religious work of speeches of a prophet, that if there was a prior tefillah, we would have seen it. This is Chizkiyahu's first time that he's encountering Hashem directly. Please keep in mind that this is years after his father has already incorporated the Assyrian culture. So Chizkiyahu going to the Beit HaMikdash with a public tefillah. Can anyone tell me what was the last time that we found an actual tefillah in the Beit HaMikdash before this? Shlomo HaMelech. Right? Shlomo and his tefillah in front of the Beit HaMikdash. And what did he say? What is going to be? He called it really the triple function of the Beit HaMikdash. To serve as a place, number one, where we can daven for rain. To serve as a place where we can daven for success in war. And thirdly, a place for all the nations to come and recognize the greatness of God. So, obviously, he's going to take advantage of function number two of the Beit HaMikdash, namely, save us again in a time of war. Hashem Yoshev HaKruvim, giving us the impression he's coming now to the area of the Kodesh Kodeshim. Atahu Elokim Levatcha, Lechol Mamlechot Haaretz, Atah Asit Et HaShemayim Ve'et Haaretz. Again, as you know, this has been incorporated in Tefillah. Hatei Hashem Asmecha Ushma. We say this as Tachanunim. Pekach Hashem Einecha Ure'ei Ushmad Kol Devei Sancheir V'Shashalach Lefaref Elokim Chai. Hashem, you created the heavens and the earth. Now, Hashem, please listen. Listen and open up your eyes and see and hear what Sancheirav has been saying against you to curse and to insult you, you living God. Amnan Hashem. And it's true, God. Hacharivu Malchei Ashur et kol haratzot v'etartzam. Look, again, the nations, the different countries, they've, again, been destroyed. V'natan et Eloheim ba'ish. And here Chizkiyahu is presenting the king of Ashur as someone who's not only strong, but when he goes and he expresses his strength, he also does it to denounce the gods of the other lands. What is he telling God? God, you don't want this to happen to you. That's right, because if Ashur is successful, then it'll, very nice, it causes a greater Chilul Hashem. Who is the first Navi to use this tactic? Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem, you can't do this because it causes a terrible Chilul Hashem. But it also tells us something, again, just to emphasize all the more about Ashur's political philosophy, which we've mentioned numerous times. Their political philosophy is intricately linked with their cultural philosophy, which is your gods don't make a difference. Our gods are the strong gods right now, and therefore we strongly encourage you to adopt them. So God, again, look at the message they're sending out. Ki lo Elohim hema, ki maaseh yedei adam. But what they're promoting are their gods. But what are their gods? They're idols. They're all, again, eitz ve'even ve'ya'abdum. So God, what are you doing? You're offering credence to these inanimate objects? Vatashem Elokeinu. Everyone see the difference in terminology? Okay, God, I hereby accept you as my God, and you're the God of all of us. Hashem Elokeinu, Hoshienu Miyado, V'yedu Kol Mamlechot Ha'aretz, Ki Ata Hashem Levadecha. And we're going to see that various kings thereafter are going to continue to expound upon this, to see Chizkiyahu as that paradigm, and a truth be told, as the living continuum of Shlomo HaMelech. Again, and this is a theme in and of itself, that Chizkiyahu, we're going to see, is going to present himself like Shlomo. And by virtue of his success, kings thereafter are always going to then compare themselves to Chizkiyahu. Chazal even take this one step further. And by virtue of the comparison of this tefillah of Chizkiyahu and how he's relating to God in this direct manner that we haven't seen basically in 250 years from the time of Shlomo HaMelech, Chazal then say that Chizkiyahu did other things to show that he's the continuum of Shlomo. Anyone know from Masechet Bava Batra, Daf Yudale Daf Tefav, what Chazal say about Chizkiyahu? Chazal say Mashiach. Again, and certainly Mashiach ben David, but that's really Yeshayahu, right? You don't need Chazal necessarily to tell you that. What do Chazal say? Chizkiyahu edited whose works? Shlomo's works. That when it comes to the works of Shlomo, they were all edited by Chizkiyahu uBeitino. Why had them edited? Firstly, to show you, obviously, what led to the process of canonization, for you to understand that there's a process of editing involved, but out of all the kings that could have edited the works of Shlomo, why particularly Chizkiyahu? Because if you look at Chizkiyahu, he seems to share a very similar relationship, a similar ideology, philosophy, religious orientation as Shlomo HaMelech. By the way, what else are Chazal already telling you? How does Shlomo start off? By Hav Shlomo at Hashem. And Shlomo could have been, again, the one after 40 years of united, unified kingdom to really bring the people onward to a wonderful generation. What do you know happens at the end of Shlomo's life? Very nice, some type of deterioration. What does that already tell you? Chizkiyahu had a very similar life as Shlomo at the beginning. Strong, religiously, politically, everything seems to be going wonderfully. And then there seems to be some type of little mess up, which, by the way, is unclear both when it comes to Shlomo. What do you hear about Shlomo? Vayahav Shlomo nashim nachriyot rabot. And then they seem to encourage him to worship Avodah Zarah, but it's not clear. Is he really worshiping Avodah Zarah or worshiping outside of the Beit HaMikdash? Or is it like Avodat Bamot, which is similar to... Again, very unclear. So too, not really sure what Chizkiyahu did wrong, but we're going to elaborate upon this. But now let's take a look here. As we see, that Chizkiyahu definitely reminds us of Shlomo, God, Ki Ata Hashem Levadecha. Vayishlach Yishayahu Ben Amot al Chizkiyahu Leimor, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Ko Amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Asher Hitpalalta Eli. Not only did you show trust in me, but what did you do? You turned to me, you prayed to me. Al Sancheirev Melech Ashur, Zeh Hadavar Asher Tiber Hashem Elav, Bazal Lecha, Na'ana Lecha, Betulat Bat Zion, Acharecha Rosh Heinia Bat Yerushalayim. Right here, again, in response to Chizkiyahu, who davened to Hashem, protecting Hashem basically from Zilzul, from mockery. So what does Hashem respond beautifully in turn? Gena, this is what Hashem said. Baza lacha la'aga lacha betulat batzion. this nation now that's sitting in Sion, which is Bazalacha, which is mocking you, which looks at you as if you're the Bazui, which is only making fun of you. Again, Baza and La'aga in the past, Betulat Bat Sion, Acharecha Rosh Hinia Bat Yerushalayim. Those who sit in Yerushalayim, who, again, what will happen? Rosh Hinia, they are going to and nod their heads in, basically laughter and mockery at those who are mocking them. Meaning you have nothing to worry about, Gana, because what are they doing? They are basically, they're so confident that you're going to fall, and therefore, Bat Zion, Bat Yerushalayim, let's see what happens. Et mi charafta v'gidafta, v'al mi harimota kol v'tisama romei necha al kadosh Yisrael. Who do you think you're really mocking? Who have you mocked over here? Who are you raising your voice against? Biyad avadecha chayrafta Adonai, v'tomarna berov rechbi ani aliti merom harim yarketei lebanon. You're saying again, and now he's quoting Sancheiriv, with the power of your own chariot, you were able to get to the summits of mountains, to the Lebanon. V'achrot komata razim v'char broshav, v'avo merom kitzo ya'ar kamilo. Again, I was able to come to the top, and I was able also to engineer and to dig and find water sources all the way down below. Ani karti v'shatiti mayim, v'achriv v'kaf pa'amai, ko ya'orei matzor. And why is God repeating these arrogances of the king of Ashur? So you think you're so great? This is how you're quoting yourself? Hello, shamata lemirachok otasita mimekedem. You've heard again what I did, what I've done, v'yisartiha atahavetiha utihi lashot galim nitzim arim b'tzurot. And now what will happen? Again, maybe you, Sancheiriv, didn't hear again the greatness of what I did many, many years ago. You think you're so great, but I have a much better reputation than you have. And what we're going to continue to see over, not only next week, but Be'ezrat Hashem the week after, is that this isn't just going to stop right now. This discourse, or really the dialogue between almost God and Sancheiriv, with Chizkiyahu and Yishayahu as the intermediaries, is meant to pronounce, obviously, God's greatness and the lack of power of Sancheiriv Melech Ashur. And therefore, what you're about to hear through the prophetic interpretation of what's going on is not only, again, a very historical and military dialogue, but obviously a very religious one as well. I'd just like to end, if you take a look at the psukim that we've been reading, to see how, sure enough, almost verbatim, everything appearing in Malachim and Yishayahu, back to your sheets for a moment. Gana, everything coming back. Gana, if you look on your sheets, until now, the psukim have been, again, almost verbatim, exactly the same in Malachim Bet Perek Yudchet and Yishayahu Perek Lamidvav. Everyone see that? Basically the same. If you look on page 145. Oh, okay. It should be the first, again, the first page that you have. The first page. You see where it says Psukim 22 through 29 in Malachim Bet. And the Psukim that we've been seeing, basically from Pasuk Zayin, through, again, we went through 15. Now if you keep turning, in Yeshayahu, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Again, basically, again, are they the same? Yes. Again, Anna, continuing 2021 through Perek Lamed Zayin, basically the same psukim. Continue now on the next page. Again, more or less the exact same psukim through basically where we just got to. Here we go. Right, Psukim, you see where the box is? Again, that's Yud Gimel, Yud Dalid. And Tetvav, Tet Zayin. We really got very far here. Again, Anna, Yishayahu Lamed Zayin. Basically verbatim with what we find in Malachim Bet. Ah, very nice. So here there are a few differences. If you look at the box just for a moment, notice that Gena here, when he calls out, there are a few really slight differences over here. That in Pasuk, in Malachim Bet, when it says, Vayidaber, Vayomer Shemu, Dvar HaMelech, and Pasuk Yedalit said, Divrei HaMelech HaGadol, and Kilo Yuchal LaHatzil, again, very similar, but one last word that's left out. In Pasuk Chavtet, that's right, that you see in Malachim, it said, Kilo Yuchal LaHatzil Etchem Miyado. Here he said, Kilo Yuchal LaHatzil Etchem. Because what did we find in Yishayahu? That it's not just about, again, lo yichal atzil etchem miyado, from his hand, from the king of Ashur, But apparently Yeshayahu wants to say it's not just about the king of Ashur. What is it about?
Any
strength, any king, any god, right? So he's going to be much more universal in nature. So that definitely is going to be somewhat significant. Notice that here the words of Divrei Hayamim obviously parallel. Can anyone tell me, just skimming for a moment, what the author of Divrei Hayamim obviously leaves out? Any moment of weakness of the people or the king, right? The idea, number one, that the people couldn't answer Rav Shaka. That's completely omitted. The idea of, again, Chizkiyahu approaching Yeshayahu, right? No, the entire dialogue with Yeshayahu is omitted in order to show that who initiated with tefillah on his own? The king. That you have to learn the people even without a Navi, that you can daven to Hashem, and will that bear results? Yes, it's very important to know during Tkufat Bayecheni. So notice, if you look, again, on that box page, you'll notice that in Divrei Hayamim, again, it just tells us, indeed, that the immediate response, as soon as Rav Shaka comes and threatens, is Pasuk Chaf, Vayitpalel Chizkiyahu HaMelech, V'Yishayahu Ben Amot Hanavi Alzot, V'Yizaku HaShamayim. How is it portrayed in Divrei Hayamim? Who davens? Chizkiyahu was the first one, and who ends up joining him? Yeshayahu, right? A beautiful idea. But what we see in Yeshayahu and in Melechim is that Hashem ultimately is going to respond directly to Chizkiyahu. Notice with a very, very long discourse, including in it words of Yeshayahu that we're going to continue with Be'ezrat Hashem next week. And then Divrei Hayamim leaves that out entirely. It leaves out a whole discourse. This is what's going to happen. It's going to happen step by step. Again, instead, what do you have in Divrei Hayamim? Chizkiyahu davens. And what's the next scene? Victory. Again. It's all taken care of. Again, that very immediate, look what a great king, a strong king, a religious king you have. In Yeshayahu, the commentary, the involvement of the Navi, the religious message that we're in the midst of right now is going to be of utmost significance. So at the climax of this discussion, I end for this week, but hope to retain the tension, Be'ezrat Hashem, for next week, where we're going to see then the next few tefillot, basically five different scenes of tefillah of Chizkiyahu, and ultimately, not only the positive aftermath, but perhaps to be able to appreciate a little bit of the psyche of Chizkiyahu and to see also somewhat of a negative aftermath. But I'll leave you on a positive note and wish you a Shavua Tov.